from the studios of 2RPH in Sydney. This is 30 Laps with Dick. I'm Richard Lyon. Welcome to this week's episode. Let's see what's on the slate, shall we? Well, the Olympics of 2020 that wasn't. Well, perhaps they'll be the Tokyo Olympics of 2021. Anyhow, let's not stop from having a good look at vehicles designed by Toyota for getting around the games, whenever the heck they are. Hey, and let's have marinara with Mattia and find out what the Ferrari boss's thoughts are on the truncated 2020 Formula One season. Pass the chili, Mr. Bonotti. Yikes, that's pretty hot. And since we're not going overseas anytime soon, because of lockout or whatever, let's go to Havana this afternoon and find out why they love the Lada, the tale of an old Russian on the world stage, albeit a bit slower. New cars, Italian Ferrari boss, a slow trip to Cuba. How about that for diversity? This week on 30 Laps. So let's get cracking. From Tony Davis, he writes in the Sophisticated Traveller magazine in autumn 2020, in the On the Road section, leaning in. As Toyota's office develops an alternate energy vehicles for the Summer Olympics, Tony Davis stops by to take them for a test drive. Take it away, Tony. Toyota's new joint venture for future mobility is called, perhaps unwisely, Triad, T-R-I-A-D. Fascinating headquarters, though, high above Tokyo. Its five floors are packed with start-up furniture and young propeller heads from all over the world. They are developing anything and everything, from screen displays to personal transport, like really, really out there personal transport. The chief executive rocked up for a chat on a tiny Segway-like stick on wheels, having first lapped the test circuit around the lift wells. Later, I saw a youth, he didn't look old enough to have a job, scooting around on powered shoes. Exactly how they were powered, Triad only knows. But they were flashing like Christmas trees as he accelerated across the carpet towards a workstation. Yep, your office and mine are positively boring. This building is ground zero for some of the many alternative energy vehicles that Toyota is providing for use in the Olympic Village during this year's Five Ring Circus. There will also be several dozen Toyota robots guiding disabled spectators to their seats and bringing them food and drink. I was allowed to drive, ride, control, whatever, two Toyota Electrics. The first was a three-wheeled scooter that was actually less fun than walking, partly because the speed had been dialed back so much, the greatest risk was aging before you got where you wanted to go. The other vehicle was potentially a perfect city commuter, and such a hoot. I did covet one immediately, called the iRoad. It looks like a weird blend of car, motorcycle, and practical joke. It's been kicking around for a few years now, gradually being improved, but never quite reaching production. Now it looks set for its moment of glory, driving ahead of the Olympic marathons. The iRoad weighs almost nothing and is powered by two tiny electric motors, making it about as green as any fully enclosed vehicle could be. Four of them fit in a normal car space, and it can squeeze between two normal cars close to the curb. It seats two in tandem, like one of those Messerschmitt bubble cars from the 1950s. That said, it even looks more lethal. That's because the front two wheels don't turn. They merely lean, while a small rear wheel on a gimbal twists and turns at crazy angles and makes the iRoad look inherently unstable. The precise angles are all worked out on the fly by an active lean computer and then actuated by electric motors. So a size 11 leap of faith is required. There is something truly odd when you leave the line and feel the back end move when you turn the wheel. And if you are controlling a mechanic like you are controlling a mechanized crab. It gets weirder when you find yourself leaning at motorcycle angles while strapped into a normal car seat. Motive power is modest, but the iRoad accelerates briskly with a top speed of 60 kilometres an hour. I belted around a wet and slippery obstacle course in a car park with every one of Toyota's support crew giving the universal slow down wave. Not sure why. Is there another way to approach an obstacle course? No matter what, I simply couldn't get it to tip or even slide, nor could I suppress my enormous smile. There are no plans to sell the iRoad here. If there were, our authorities would step on them, as they did with Renault's four-wheeled, non-leaning but otherwise equally green and practical Twizy. Still, Toyota has a fascinating array of alternative energy vehicles at various points along the pipeline, including plug-in hybrid, full electric and hydrogen fuel cell models. Mind you, the company has revealed that is often slated and stated deep-seated desire for a better world is just about as much bollocks as when any other pumpy company talks about putting anything other than shareholders' pockets first. Late last year, Toyota, which spends tens of millions marketing the environmental credentials of its hybrid engines, sided with US President Donald Trump, along with GM and Fiat Chrysler, to undermine the fuel efficiency standards signed up for under Barack Obama. That was just about the Japanese giant jetted That was just after, I beg your pardon, the Japanese giant jetted 300 journalists from around the world to its Tokyo headquarters to boast about the iRoad and its forthcoming green mobility solutions. Those journalists included your humble correspondent, Fair Cop. I guess that makes me part of the problem too. And that was Tony Davis in Tokyo before they called off the Olympics by the sound of things. As Toyota's office develops an alternate energy vehicles for the Summer Olympics, Tony Davis stops by to take them for a test drive. It was from the Sophisticated Traveller magazine, Autumn 2020 edition. It would appear there were a lot of major dudes in Tokyo.
So bad, my funky one. You tell me that your super fine mind has come undone. Any major dude with half a heart surely will tell you, my friend. Any minor world that breaks apart falls together again. When the demon is...
We move from the Japanese to the Italians. And we move to The Guardian and Giles Richards, who writes on 9th of April this year, Ferrari agree Formula One season can end in 2021 and support radical race changes. Ferrari says flexibility needed to stage 2020 Formula One season, short races, double races, and packing all the races in together. Let's see what this is all about on 30 laps. The Ferrari team principal, Mattia Binotto, has said his team would support serious changes to Formula One race weekends so the seasons can take place. After the Canadian Grand Prix was was the ninth meeting to be called off on Tuesday, Bonotti emphasised Formula One teams now needed to be flexible in adapting what has been a long-established format, and stated that Ferrari would agree to extend the season into February 2021. With the race in Montreal postponed, the first meeting that can take place is the French Grand Prix on June 28. I stopped there, folks, because that's been postponed as well after this was written. But here we go, which is also under threat from the coronavirus outbreak. A minimum of 8 races are required to constitute a world championship, and with the weekends available rapidly decreasing, Bonotto believes Formula One will have to take radical action. From our side, it is really whatever is needed, Bonotto said. Short race weekends, double races, whenever it will finish, packing all the races together, whenever and whatever that will be. It's important to be flexible. It is understood that the concepts of running 2 races over a single Grand Prix and removing Friday practice sessions are currently being evaluated, as is the potential of staging the first races that can be held behind closed doors. Formula One is facing a damaging financial blow if racing does not take place, and organisers have already discussed extending the 2021 season into next year with teams. Bonotto said that Ferrari accepted this proposal. We are prepared for it, so in case that is the choice, we will support it. I'm not sure if that will be the case, but whatever will be, I think it's important from our side to be supportive and making sure that we will do whatever is necessary. Revenues will be hit hard by the absence of racing, but on Monday the teams failed to come up with an agreement on lowering the proposed budget cap of $175 million set to be introduced in 2021. Ferrari are concerned that as a manufacturer of parts for other teams, they would be unfairly impeded by a low spending limit. Low spending, crikey. Bonotto insisted that now was not the right time to be making such decisions for fear of damaging the sport. I think we should avoid being really emotional at this moment, he said. We know that we will face difficult situations, but we need as well to somehow maintain the DNA, the essence of Formula One, which is competition. We should not forget that Formula One and motorsport is about competition. So we enjoyed our marinara, and I slopped marinara sauce all down the front as I normally do, and we thank Giles Richards for his piece in The Guardian on the 9th of April 2020. Formula One team Ferrari agreed F1 season can end in 2021 and support radical race changes. We take our travelling minstrel show at 30 laps to Cuba and talk about the Lada. We stick with The Guardian and we talk about a piece that was originally in The Observer. Take Me to Your Lada, Cuba's Passion for the Little Russian Box. Written by Rudy Nickel in Havana on the 19th of April this year. Landy is a stylish man. He has that aging crooner's slick back hair, the short sleeve cool of a Miami Beach architect, and a terrible, terrible Lada car. He's my go-to chauffeur in Havana, which sounds a little grand, but it's more economical than buying one of those babies which will set you back £15,000. It's also why, despite the windows having no handles, a wrench is passed back, and the rear seat containing a loose spring like an unkind proctologist, Landy fusses over it like a baby. For this little blue car completes his look. On this island, better known for American Incredible Hulks, it marks him out as a member of the Larga Ocracia, which is Cuba's revolutionary Larga aristocracy. It's 50 years to the day since the first Larga ran off the production line in Togliatti, a Russian company town, also known as Togliatti, on a bend in the Volga. That means it's also 3 days until the 150th anniversary of the birth of Vladimir Ilyich Lenin, whose centenary that moment celebrated. A collaboration between the Soviet state and Italy's Fiat, the Larga was the version of vision of designers who set out to make these small cars virtually indestructible. The result was the Zagili, a bulked-up Fiat 124 that even poets have struggled to describe as anything other than boxy. The body was toughened, drum brakes installed, and clearances were heightened, all to give help with the Russian roads and the Russian winters. More crucially, the car, renamed for the world as the Larga, was easy to maintain. The classic Larga became one of history's most manufactured vehicles, with around 18 million built. In the 1970s, Soviet support for Cuba was at its height. The government gave Lardas to doctors, people working on the sugar farms, athletes, engineers, and scientists, says Hedy Kobas of Cuba's Club Amigo de Malto, which has 1,000 members. This set the owners apart from those with the leftover Chevy Bel Airs and Ford Fairlanes from before the 1959 revolution. A friend recalls going to nightclubs and seeing the smarter set beginning to jump into Lardas at closing time. You knew their parents or grandparents were someone important. Willie Hierro Allen, the 77-year-old editor-in-chief of the magazine Excelsior de Malta, recalls, in 1978, I was running Transporter magazine, and it seems someone thought I deserved it. The vice minister called and told me, you're going to have a car. I felt really excited. The car was blue. I still keep it in the same colour. Cuba's extraordinary ability to soften the scent and sentimentalize swiftly went to work on the Alterian runaround. Almost any Cuban can change spark plugs. Most can swap brake pads and fuel pumps, says Kubas. Lardas are members of the family. It's a sentence everyone here uses. I've seen modifications to the bodywork, new air inlets or extensions to make it closer to the ground. But apart from music systems, these are always small, he goes on. We don't feel good about making big cuts on a Larga's bodywork. It's like you are cutting somebody. It's easy to understand why people look after them. The last classic Larga arrived in Cuba in 1988. But Auto Cubana, Cuba's version of Auto Trader, lists models from 18,000 Cuban convertible pesos, CUC, which is about £14,500. Good ones sell for twice that. It isn't love, though it's a dearth of other cars. For that money, Cubans can buy an apartment in one of the best areas of Havana. Following Perestroika, Larga's vast parent company, Aveto Vaz, went through the upheavals felt by many Soviet state industries. Production plummeted and corruption flourished. While the classic Larga continued to be built, the wheels were coming off. In the mid-1990s, there were 130,000 Lardas registered in the UK. By 2018, there were just 179. Countries were starting to impose carbon emission laws, and the larder couldn't make the grade. Only in Cuba, with its estimated 250,000 larders, did the smoke refuse to clear. "Here we are responsible for caring for our cars," says Iro, the editor of Excelsius Del Morta. "When you grow old, your son comes in saying, 'Dad, let me fix the car.' When your son has a son too, and with time he is the one in charge of the car." That's how Larder ended up becoming the car of the Cuban family. Sadly, as Landy and I head out onto the highway, it may be the lingering smell of exhaust fumes that triggers my nostalgia. My first car was a Skoda, the Czech equivalent of the Larder. My dad bought it for me, saying, and I still hope he was joking, that he got it cheap because the previous owner had suffocated in it. There's only so much I can take. I have a second go-to chauffeur. Jesus is a more austere figure than Landy. He rents a modern larder from the state of 320, built under Avotaz's new owner, Renault, that arrived here in 2017. It's an entirely different creature, and, in truth, it's better for long journeys. As Jesus says, it's comfortable and has a large trunk. Crikey, hey? Well, that was from Rudy Nickel in Our Man in Havana. There's a book title in there somewhere. This originally was from The Observer, and this copy was published in The Guardian in April 2020 this year.
I could be wrong, but I have seen your face before. You were the man that I saw running from the store. You owed him money, but you gave him something more. With a gun, with a gun, you will be what you are, just the same.
Old cars and old guns, hey? Well, from Larder, we go back to favourite car in every country. And we go with Poland and the Fiat, which is related to the Larder, as we've just discovered. In Poland, the favourite car is the Fiat FSO 126P. The 126P is not the only former Fiat design to have ducked behind the Iron Curtain to make another life for itself. But it is the only one that found the greatest favour in Poland. Basic design and decent packaging made it ideal during the country's communist years, but its popularity meant production lasted a decade after democracy took hold. Polski Fiat became FSO in 1983. The company was gradually absorbed into Fiat over the next decade. Today, the factory at Tychy in the old European factory, and it's the old European factory that produces the Fiat 500. But quintessentially, that Italian car is still going ahead strong. The factory also produces the Ford Ka, K-A, and the Lancia Ypsilon. Finally, to France. The Renault Clio, 1990 to the present day, 3 million. Renault have turned out more than 14 million Clios during the Super Mini's lifespan to date. And almost a quarter of those have been for domestic consumption. While the French may be biased towards their homegrown vehicles, there's no denying the Clio is every bit as good as a choice today as it was when it was launched back in 1990. Perhaps we'll do one more, hey, because I know how much you love this. In Belgium, it's the Volkswagen Golf, 1974 to the present day, 572,000. The Belgians have a long-standing association with the Volkswagen Golf that runs deeper than merely buying more of them than any other model of car. From 1980, VW built the Golf Mark I at the Voorst plant that was already turning out the Passat. Successive generations of Golf were made up to the Mark V, and the factory now builds the Audi A1. It will also soon start producing the new Audi all-electric SUV. And that's probably where we'll leave favourite cars in every country for this week. We might come back to it at some other stage. Well, I hope you've enjoyed our trip around the world today. From Cuba to Italy, Modena to be precise. And of course we started in Japan with that seriously cool vehicle that we probably won't see over here because they're right, the authorities wouldn't allow it on the road with not having turning front wheels, amongst 100 other reasons, I guess. But hey, that was a bit of fun, wasn't it? We'll probably see those in the Olympics of 2021 or wherever the heck they're going to be. Look out for them in front of the marathons. Thanks so much for your company today. It was great to bring these to you. I look forward to doing it again next week when we'll have, well, who knows what we'll have, but it'll be something that I hope you'll find interesting. I'm Richard Lyon. You were 30 Laps with Dick, a show that is written and produced in the Sydney studios of Radio 2RPH, and I look forward to talking to you very soon. Oh, I almost forgot. That's right. Next week we're going to talk about the seven deadly sins. Or that should be the seven things you should always do when you're looking at buying a car. Seven. And probably would be a sin if you missed one of them out. Anyway, that's a brief look at what we're doing next week. Coupling that with why is a Ferrari red? And why does the traditional Mini Cooper have a white roof? Why do they paint famous cars in these famous colours? And what's the story? What in the heck is all that about? We'll have to have a look at that and a couple of other things next week in 30 laps. Also, we're going to be starting a series of great motor racing stories from the English Motorsport magazine that's been publishing these stories during COVID-19. And some wonderful battles. We'll have a look on one every other week, I think, is probably the way to look at that. Stirling Moss will be in there, Jimmy Clark, Graham Hill, Jochen Rindt, Piers Courage. Some great stories about famous rivalries in famous races. So I hope you can join me for those and for next week for the Seven Deadly Sins. I look forward to your company. And as I said before, keep washing your hands, and I'll talk to you next week, hey? Bye for now.